Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to Relentless Pursuit International Radio Show with your admirable, exemplary, exquisite, distinguished, accomplished, superlative, transcendent, distinctive, incomparable, magnificent, paradigmatic, pulchritudinous,
Flanders.
Huh?
What are you talking about? What are you doing?
I'm introducing the radio show.
No, with that accent and those words.
I just what thought it would sound good if we spruced it up
if
a little.
If we what? It's 8:30. Ain't nobody got time for that.
Ain't nobody got time. Ain't nobody got time. Ain't nobody got time for that.
We got to get this show on the road.
It's the Relentless Pursuit International Radio Show with your hosts, Philandis Harris
and Tamika Sanders. Relentless Pursuit is a faith-based, young adult radio talk show created to bridge the gaps between racial, spiritual, and social divides. We discuss controversial issues that directly hinder the millennial generation from pursuing their God-given purpose.
We want to showcase young adults who are relentlessly pursuing God and their passions in the form of ministry, entrepreneurship, and through their gifts and talents.
Our goal is to equip our listeners with biblical principles that will nurture their dreams and catapult them into their divine destiny.
It's a relentless pursuit.
Going on, everybody. This is Philandis
and Tamika,
and we want to thank you all for tuning in yet for another show. We want to give a special thank you to the owner of MCD Network, Coach D, for extending us this opportunity. And we just want to just have you to expect an amazing show tonight. And so, we're having a very special guest tonight. Her name is Stephanie Cozzolino, and she's going to be sharing a powerful story of how she overcame childhood sexual abuse and some other issues that caused. And so Stephanie Cozzolino is a certified success coach and speaker of God's truth, love, and grace, Her life's mission is not to let anyone that crosses her path leave her presence without experiencing truth and the love of God. She has a passion for outreach and enjoys mentoring women, young and old, who have also been the hurt little girl she once was. She has a heart for the broken and leading them to accept a relationship with her Savior, Jesus Christ. And she's had the awesome opportunity to put this story together in a book that she just released about a month ago. It's called My Father and I, which is the name of tonight's show. And I've had a chance to read this book. It is powerful. It's very raw, I'll say, and I mean that in a great way. You know, a lot of times we hear people tell their testimonies or they write books about it and they kind of withhold the information or they make it pretty when it's not pretty. You know, when you give your testimony, you want to tell people all the dirty details, all the secrets, the stuff that'll wow you and kind of make you uncomfortable. And that's what she does in this story. And she brings it all together in such a way that's powerful, that's relatable. You feel like she's talking directly to you, and she just lets it all be out there. And so we just want to give her the opportunity to speak to everybody. Stephanie, are you there?
I am here.
Great. Go ahead and say hi to our listeners.
Hi, everybody. How are you guys doing tonight? I know I can't hear you, but I hope you guys are doing great, and I pray that tonight's show is just a blessing to you and that somehow my story can do something deep within you and just show you God's love and redeeming power. So I'm excited.
Great. And so
we also have her mom on the show.
Yes.
We don't want to forget about her.
Yes, we have her mom on the show. Miss Diane, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hello, everyone.
Our listeners.
Hello, everyone. I'm so glad that you tuned in, and I can tell you that you are going to be tremendously blessed by Stephanie's testimony. It may be hard to hear, and you may wonder what was her mom thinking, but I can tell you that God is a God of restoration and reconciliation, and he has healed every wound in her heart, in my heart, and our relationship is amazing. So all the glory to him, and I just can't wait to see people get free tonight.
Absolutely. Even though her book is called My Father and I, she's talking about basically how the relationship between her heavenly father was established, how it was nurtured, and how it grew. But I think it's a really powerful aspect of the story to have her mom on because some of the things that happened, it involves her mom directly. So we just wanted to have her mom on to share her perspective along with Stephanie's. And so I just want to jump right into the discussion. You know, Stephanie, I read the book, and in the beginning, you know, you talked briefly about some things that happened in both your parents' lives that you saw reflected in your own life. And, you know, how was your relationship with your biological father? I want you to talk about that first, you know, since our listeners, they didn't read the book, I did, so I just want you to kind of talk about that, like how was that relationship, how did you feel within that relationship, and what were some things that happened that contributed to, I guess, the way that you felt about it?
Yeah, definitely. So my and my dad's relationship from the very beginning, he was in the military. My parents were pretty young when they got married. So he was not there for a lot of my first year. So I feel like that was kind of, I feel like that's really key for fathers to be present in their children's lives, especially, you know, during those important bonding times. And so we kind of got off to a bad start with that. But, you know, he was in the military, he was deployed and different things like that. So I did talk about my relationship, or my mom, a little bit of her past and a little bit of my dad's past, because it was really important to kind of build that foundation so that the readers would understand why I was mothered the way I was, or why I was fathered the way that I was. And so my father actually had a pretty rough upbringing. He never knew his dad. His stepdad raised him, but he grew up in an alcoholic household because of his mom and also because of his stepdad. It was abusive at times. So him and his twin brother kind of had it rough. And so my dad actually decided to go into the military and do something, you know, better with his life and things like that. But because of a lot of the things that he experienced, I believe, as a child and growing up, there was a lot of issues of rejection. You know, he also at points was a very heavy drinker and things like that. So that kind of, it really did affect how he fathered me. I always felt like I walked on eggshells around him. He was also abusive to my mom, and he had a lot of different affairs. And so I would actually go to some of the houses of these women. And so our relationship was, I was fearful. I was kind of fearful of him for sure. And when I was about 7, my parents got divorced. So he missed a huge chunk of me growing up. And when some of those things happened, he wasn't there to lean on. He lived in a different state and things like that. So today, my relationship with my dad is, I'm still praying for restoration. We did go through a long period where we had a pretty good relationship, where our relationship was getting restored, and that's when I started having my kids. But we had a blowout a few years ago, just because when you don't deal with certain things, they kind of linger. And when you tuck them under, at some point, you know, they're going to bust wide open at the seams. And so just praying that in just standing by the promise that, you know, one day that our relationship will be fully restored. So that's my little quick thing with my dad.
Well, that's good. That's actually the answer that I was looking for you to give. And the reason why I started off with that question is because I was thinking about it through reading the book, and after kind of coming up with the questions that I wanted to ask, it would make more sense. I don't want to get ahead of myself. I'm sorry. But that was the answer that I was looking for you to give. So with kind of just like there being something missing, some dynamics missing in the typical father-daughter relationship, whenever your mom remarried and, you know, even if it wasn't right when she remarried, but in the process of him getting to know your mom and him getting to know you, what was the process like of him building a trust with you and kind of just getting you to let your guards down and see your stepdad as a father figure, I should say? Like, what did that process look like for you?
Yeah, so actually one day my mom, I didn't really know about him, or, you know, my mom was seriously dating or anything like that. She showed up at the daycare of me and my brother, and she had him with her, and so they picked us up, and I don't know, we might have went and did a couple of things or something, and so I didn't really ever have that close relationship with my father, so I think I kind of just, like, clinged on to it, but he was super nice, super awesome. You know, when my mom would go to work, he would even watch us, and he would take us to this lake, and we would feed the catfish, or, you know, he would buy us toys, and he would do all kinds of different things with us. And I never, even looking back, I don't really think I saw a sign at that point, you know, that anything like that would ever happen. I was just so excited to have, like, this father figure that treated me right in our lives. And, you know, he obviously loved my mom and different things like that. And so we embraced it. Me and my brother embraced it, I think, for the most part, especially initially. And so he definitely won my trust, I mean, without a doubt. So that's kind of how it happened.
Yeah, and we've had two different shows in the past about daddy issues. And I know that one of the things that we talked about with the importance of a father being present in his daughter's life is she comes to know her value and her worth with how he interacts with her, and also how she witnesses him interacting with her mother, right? And so because it didn't go so well with your biological father, like with him not necessarily being there, not, you know, out of malice, but because of, you know, his career, it didn't allow him to be there as much. And when you did witness him being there and how he interacted with your mom, it wasn't communicating the, I guess, the healthiest message about, you know, your value and your worth as a daughter and as a young, yeah, young girl growing up. And so I kind of just wanted to do a comparison. So, you know, with your dad, it not going so well, and then you have your stepdad that comes into the picture, and he does everything right. You know what I'm saying? Like, he shows you how a woman is supposed to be treated and how he treated your mom, and he invested time, spending time with you. He took you places, and he spoke to your value and your worth as a little girl by investing in you emotionally and even, I want to say, materially. Like, he communicated to you that you were valuable, that you were cherished, right? And so,
yeah.
I do know that in the book you kind of just describe the molestation that took place. And I can imagine that after him spending some time with building his trust with you, building your trust with him, I should say, that had to be devastating, right, for you to get to a place where your guards are down, you seeing this as the dad that you didn't have before, and then molestation takes place. Like, how did that make you feel towards him, you know? And then after you got to how you felt towards him, like, how do you assess that it affected your ability to trust men in general, if it had any effect?
Yeah. So it definitely devastated me. I have to say that I didn't get a true understanding of how much it really did devastate me until I was older. I think about it, that situation that happened, and it almost seems like a black hole. I think I mentioned that in my book. I don't remember what season it was. I don't remember you know, what it looked like outside. I don't remember the month. I don't remember the date. I don't remember anything. I just remember that I was in fifth grade. And so it definitely devastated me. I know that I might be giving away a little bit too much of my story, but I know that the next morning after it happened, when my mom kind of came to me because she knew something was off and we discussed it, and I went to school that day, and when I got back home from school, she, you know, let me know what happened, that she confronted him and things like that. And so the way that I felt and what I told him, I had to go to him. I had to go upstairs, up all the stairs. I had to go to his room. My mom wanted me to tell him how I felt about him. And I said I hated him. That's what I told him, was that I hated him. But at that point, I thought he was going to leave. So I was probably a little bit more braver, even though I was completely not brave, if that makes any sense,
yeah,
to say that. So that's all I can go by is that memory of me telling him that I hated him. And so it definitely affected me. And then to answer your second question, it definitely affected my ability to trust men. The thing that sticks out the most to me is when I would visit my dad. He lived in a different state at the time. When I was getting a little bit older after the molestation, I would visit him. Didn't see him very often, but I would find myself feeling uneasy or guarded, alone with my dad, my biological dad. And it's not because he was ever sexually abusive or even showed signs of being sexually abusive, but it was because I couldn't put it past anybody. I guess I just didn't, you know, trust. And so I would say, yeah, I would be uncomfortable, you know, in certain situations, because you just never want to experience anything like that again. And as far as, you know, my relationship, like an intimate relationship with my husband, it definitely affected that. He has gotten a lot of the brunt of you know, those triggers that I have or have had and things like that. And he's been there to support me through that. So,
I would say, Stephanie, I don't know if you share with the listeners what exactly happened between you and your stepdad. I know Philandis and I have a greater idea because we've been able to read through in your book, but if you could just share with our listeners what happened, you know, when, how old were you, when did the change come, what led up to that, your experience, just kind of describe to our listeners what took place between you and your stepdad.
Yeah, so like I said, I was in fifth grade. I don't remember anything else about, you know, what time of year or anything like that. And I actually, I don't think I've ever asked my mom that question either. I don't know why. It's just, I guess it's better to just be not knowing. It was in fifth grade. But my mom was actually pregnant with my, I'm the oldest of four, so it was my youngest brother. She was pregnant with him. And the way we lived in my grandparents' house. And so when you go upstairs, there's a room, and that was mine and my brother's room. And that's the first room you walk into. And then you go, there was a middle room, and that was my mom and my stepdad's room. And so it was just one night. My brother was actually in the same room, and he was sleeping. And my stepdad came into my room. I don't know if I was I don't think I was sleeping. I can't quite remember. But he just came into my room and sat on my bed and sat me on his lap. And, you know, he said a few things to me. And then he, you know, tried to kiss me. And he put his tongue in my mouth. And I just completely frozen. I was completely frozen. And he told me, I didn't do anything. And he said, well, that's not how you kiss. And so he did it again. And then he proceeded to stick his hand up my shirt and, you know, fondle my breast. And I don't remember anything. It didn't go much further than that, but I really don't remember how it ended. I don't remember what else he said. I think I just kind of, I don't know if I blacked out or I don't know if it's just my brain has blacked it out. I have no idea. But that's what happened that night. So my mom was in the next room sleeping on one side of me. And then my brother was on the other side of the room sleeping on the other side of me. So that's what happened.
So was it something that ended up happening regularly or just a one-time occasion?
That was, you know, it's so funny. I was talking, well, not really funny, but funny in a way, as far as I was talking to Philandis about it, and I was letting her know, hey, you know, it was just the one main thing that happened. There were other things, but they were smaller. And I listened to myself, and I was like, you know, that's crazy. I am, like, making this seem like, oh, well, you know, that wasn't as bad because, you know, it was something smaller. It wasn't that main huge event. But honestly, that was, those other little things that he did were just as bad. And for instance, I remember there were a few things that were kind of ongoing that happened, but it was never to that extent again. I think that he was pretty much scared of my mom at that point. Not completely scared, but obviously he wasn't going to do something to that extent. But I remember, you know, there was a day that I was not feeling good and my stomach was really hurting. And so, he came into my room because I was like, I can't go to school, whatever. And he came into my room and he started like feeling around my stomach. He was like, right there, right there. And he kind of went down like below like my panty line, like, and just started feeling, oh, is it right here, right here? So he was really good at kind of disguising those types of things. Obviously, I felt very uncomfortable and I knew that it wasn't right. But again, I think I just froze. And kind of giving the story away also, he never left. And so I feel like a huge part of that was feeling like, well, it doesn't really matter, you know, because he's still here and he did that. So as far as, you know, being able to have help or being able to talk to my mom about it or things like that, I think I just felt like that wasn't going to be very effective. So he was able to get away with, you know, these little things that he was doing, that he was disguising, you know, as really caring. So,
yeah. And one comment that I wanted to make earlier when Stephanie and I were talking about I actually asked that same question about was it an ongoing thing or was it just one offense or what have you. And when she started talking about kind of making the other instances less severe than the other, I got what she meant, but I was actually reading in this book about the different, I guess, coping mechanisms that victims of sexual abuse have. And one of them were that you kind of make one offense less severe than the other. So, for instance, if someone was raped by their father and then you had another person who was raped by a cousin, typically the one that was raped by the cousin would be like, well, you know, it wasn't that bad. You know, at least it wasn't my father. But that doesn't, just because it's not your father, that doesn't make it any less, I don't know the word.
Painful.
Yeah, any less. Yeah.
Traumatizing.
Yeah. It's still a violation of your body. And so I, with all of that being said, I do have a question for your mom, Ms. Diane. So with all of this, whenever stepdad came into the picture, what was your desire? Like, was your desire to see just a complete family for your children because you realized that it didn't work out with Stephanie's biological father? So what was going through your mind whenever he came into the picture? Like, did you ever expect anything like that to happen? Like, just talk to us about your relationship with him from your point of view.
Well, basically, you know, like Stephanie described the relationship with Max, her father, it was, you know, full of turmoil and dysfunction and everything. And I was at the point, well, I'm going to get a divorce. So during that process, this is when I met her stepdad. And here comes, I went from one extreme to another where this guy was so nice and so kind and so sweet. And coming from basically, you know, dysfunction myself, I couldn't believe, wow, this is a knight in shining armor who accepts me, who, because, you know, going through the relationship with my ex-husband, he was like, you know, you're not going to leave me. You're not going to divorce me. Who's going to want you? Because my children are biracial. Who's going to want you with two children that are biracial? You're fat, you're ugly. And I wasn't even overweight, but I believed all these lies. So once I met this person, it was like, wow, that just trumps everything he says. So basically I jumped from the boiling pot to the frying pan, so to speak, with this relationship, and I didn't expect this to happen. And the one thing I can say now is, like, I look back on it and I think about it, you know, he was, and knowing his family, they're a very kind family, they're a very loving family, and they do a lot of things together. So by him taking my kids and taking them to go feed the catfish and taking them to buy them toys and speaking into their lives, it was like, wow, I understand it. But, yeah, I didn't see it coming. I didn't see it coming, and I was totally shocked by it. But I knew something was different about her the next day. I just knew it.
I was going to say, I wanted to make a comment. I feel like this is a really sensitive topic, but I'm glad that we have both of you on the phone because I interact with a lot of people just that has dealt with molestation, and I've read a lot of books or testimonies of people that dealt with child molestation, and there's always a contrast between the mother's response to the molestation and the daughter's, the way that she received the response. So whether or not there was a response or if there was a response that wasn't what she expected the response to be, and there kind of brings a vision between the modern mother-daughter relationship. So having you both on the phone, I want you to share your responses from your perspective. So, Mom, what was your actual response and your heart behind your response? And the things that you were going through as a mother knowing that this happened to your child and, you know, knowing the response that you made or didn't make or whatever, if you felt like you made a mistake, we want to hear that. And then, Stephanie, we also want to hear your perception of your mom's response. What did her response mean to you, or how did it affect you? So I want to hear both perspectives on that.
Okay, well, I can tell you, just to give you a little background of the decisions of why I made, I, too, was molested at the same age. And in my situation, as soon as it happened, you know, I got up. I was at my sister's house. I got up, and I got on the phone, and I called my mom at 3 in the morning and told her exactly what happened. And she told me to wake my sister up, tell my sister to get on the phone. I told my sister it was my sister's husband, and she was pregnant at the same time. So his Satan is a liar, how he comes and does these things. And so nothing ever happened. And, you know, the next day I got a lecture on, you know, the genital parts of a woman and a man when I know what they were already. But because my sister was pregnant, it got covered up. And so I just lived with that. But when it happened to Stephanie, she says she can't really remember, but I do remember. And I remember that morning I was taking him to work because we lived with my mom and dad, and he was going to work. He had to be to work at 8, and Stephanie had to be to school at 8:45. So he had given my daughter to Stephanie, and Stephanie was laying on the bed, and the baby was up, and he gave the baby to Stephanie, and he kissed the baby. And I'm thinking, okay. And then he kissed Stephanie on the cheek. And I looked at that. I looked at how intently he kissed her on the cheek. It was almost passionately. And I looked at her response. And I knew right then and there something happened. So I took him to work. And I came back home. And I sat her down. And I said, I want to talk to you. And you can tell me. And you don't have to be scared or anything, and tell me what happened. But see, I don't remember her telling me that he kissed her. I think I said, did he touch you? Did he do something? And she said, yes. That was all I needed to hear. I got so angry. I don't even know why I sent her to school, to be honest with you. I shouldn't have. It's so crazy. I shouldn't have sent her to school. I should have spent that time with her. I should have, you know, been with her and held her and loved on her. And Stephanie, I'm so sorry that I didn't do that for you. And I think that's one of the hardest things. But I was so angry that because I understand this now. I called him up at the place of business he was at, and I told him, you better get rid of all those customers. You better close it up. You better close that shop down because I'm coming. And either I'm coming to confront you, and either if your business is going to be out in front of everybody, or I don't really care. So when I got there, of course, the business was closed. And I think, and this is so bad to say, but I whooped on him for like 45 minutes straight. I hit him. I punched him. I scratched him. I did what I could to hurt him. And all he did was block me. And I knew he was guilty because he couldn't do anything else. He couldn't, all he would do is block my hand. He would say, I asked him, did you do it? And he said, yes. So that only entailed me more beating up on him. And so when Stephanie got home from school, I made her go upstairs and tell him. And now I realize why I did that, because I never got to confront the person that did what to me. So my reasoning, now that I know it, was, Stephanie, you march upstairs and you tell him exactly how you feel. And she did. She went upstairs and told him exactly how she felt, I mean. But he didn't leave. I didn't make him leave. There was the whole thing about leaving. I talked to him about leaving. I told him he was going to leave. But ultimately, I did the same thing that my mother did to me. And when it happened to me, it was my sisters, two of my sisters knew, and my mother knew. and they covered it up and swept it under the rug. And I did exactly what was done to me. But here, I was going to be better than my mom. I was going to do better than my mom. I was going to keep an eye on her. I was going to make his life miserable. Anything I could do to get back at him, anything I could say to him. I was always one step ahead of him. When I had my son, she stayed downstairs and slept with my mom. He wasn't allowed to be alone with her, but there were times he was, and these were the times that he was doing that stuff. But, yeah, it's hard. It's hard to say it. It's hard to go through it, and it put a tremendous strain on our relationship. But,
yeah. I'm over here, cool. I'm like, wow.
This is deep.
Yeah, wow.
But what I want to say to you, Diane, is that, you know, I can't imagine how painful it is for you to own up to that, but I respect and admire the fact that, you know, not only are you willing to do it in general, you know, but even before the public, like, you're able to say, like, hey, I messed up. And, you know, I realized that I messed up. And I don't want you to feel condemned or, you know, I don't want you to feel condemned. Like, things happen. And, you know, the great thing about it is that, you know, God was able to work forgiveness in you and Stephanie's relationship and reconcile. But I do respect you a lot for that, because I've heard a lot of stories where, you know, I've had friends in the past who have been in Stephanie's position, and the mother, she didn't own up to it. She knew about what happened. She knew what the man did. She knew that it was a regular thing, and she still stayed with him. And even worse, in those situations, the mother actually, she denied that it happened, and she made the daughter feel like she was lying, or that, you know, she was trying to get in between her and her man's relationship. Like, that happens. And, you know, us on the outside, we're looking at it and we can point the finger and we can blame her, not to condone what she did, but we don't know what's going on the inside of her. And so I believe that, you know, with you being able to own up to that, there's a different dynamic of people that you can reach with that, because I don't hear a lot of moms owning up to that. I don't hear them being repentant, you know, because they're so ashamed of what happened. So I really...
Yeah, that takes a lot of courage.
Yes. And I want to say one other thing is that I didn't even know... I mean, I thank God for the discernment to realize it, because I don't think Stephanie would have ever told me. I really don't think she would have told me. I think she would have basically took one for the team, because she wanted, you know, she knew what I had been through, because she was such a protector over me. But the one thing I can say, and the best advice I can give, is for any mom that's out there that you are deciding to get into a relationship, don't do it out of your flesh, because that was a fleshly relationship. Don't do it out of your flesh. He can speak and talk a good game, and he can come around your children, but your children are your number one priority. And here's the one thing that I can tell you is that he was grooming my daughter. And when I say grooming, he was getting her prepared for what he was going to do, but he didn't count on me. He didn't count on me realizing what he did. But when you've got a man that comes into your life, and here's the thing, he was grooming her. He was being nice to her, but at the same time, he was bad-mouthing her to me. Oh, she's a brat. Oh, she's this. Oh, she's that. You know, almost discrediting her. Discrediting her so that when it came, and that's how Satan does, because my brother-in-law did the same thing to me. But in the meantime, he was doing his, and I didn't realize that he was preparing 2 years. 2 years before he actually did something, because she was pregnant from another child, the first one. So it was a 2-year process before he did what he did. So this was what was going on. He was bad mouthing her to me, but something was always clicking in my head. No, I don't think so. no, you're misunderstanding her. So then after it happened, then he turned it up a little bit more, and he would discredit her more. And I would be like, you know what? You sound like a jealous boyfriend. So all I can say is that, mom, when you bring a man into your life, you better pray about it. You better seriously pray about it, and you don't leave that man alone with your son or with your daughter, because it's too much. We have a saying in Spanish where my mom always says it, el diablo nunca duerme. That means, she says, the devil never sleeps. He's always looking for an opportunity. He's always looking for a way in. And women, if you've been molested and you're a mom, you got to get healing from that. You got to get deliverance from that, because if you don't, that's a generational curse that's going to come on your child. You got to stop it. You got to nip it in the bud. And I didn't do anything. I didn't get no healing or anything until afterward. It's done. It's not going on any further in our lineage. So that's all I wanted to say.
That's powerful, and I'm loving everything that you're saying. Really quickly, before we go any further, this got really deep really quickly. If anybody is just tuning in, or you are just signing on now or have in the last few minutes, we're speaking with our special guest, Stephanie Cozzolino, and her mom is also on the line. And she just recently, within the past month, released a book called My Father and I, where she just talks about her journey of overcoming. That involves childhood sexual abuse. It involves a destroyed relationship between her mother, her biological father, her stepfather, and, you know, different bad relationships that she's had. And it's just a really powerful story. And so we've just been asking a few questions for her to talk about, and we just heard from mom about, you know, the decision that she made as far as knowing about her daughter's molestation with her boyfriend, and, you know, continuing to let him be there. And it just got really deep. So if you just tuned in, you might want to listen to the rebroadcast. But anyway, we do want to hear Stephanie. Like, so after hearing what your mom said just now, are there any contrast to how you took her response immediately after the event, and how, I guess, you interpret it and how you take it now? Like, is there a difference hearing her heart now or than when you first told her about what happened?
Well, I want to hear from Stephanie's perspective what
her
mom did, because that varies.
Gotcha.
You know.
Yeah. So I felt like the one person that I knew I could trust that was supposed to be my protector didn't protect me, and I didn't understand it. In my eyes, I was just like, he's more important. Like, he's more important than me, her daughter, you know, that she didn't protect. And so that was really hard for me. And I can't say that I realized all of that right then and there. I think it's just been, you know, it was over time, and just, you know, dealing with it, even with writing the book and stuff like that, realizing that that's how younger Stephanie felt. That's how Stephanie in fifth grade felt, was basically like rejection, is what it boiled down to, was feeling rejected, because I felt like my mom chose him over me and my well-being. So that was really difficult to deal with.
I'm sorry.
I got speechless for a moment because I'm realizing some things here, but I understand what you just said. I can relate to that. Maybe not necessarily in the same way, but I can relate. And so I guess my next question would be, like, with that, with you feeling, you know, betrayed by the one person that you felt like was supposed to protect you, and feeling like she chose the man over you, do you think that event affected your ability to have healthy relationships with other females, like other women that may have had the potential to play a mother role, or just in general, like even with female peers, like do you think that that had an effect on your ability to have relationships with other females looking back?
That's a really great question. I actually had never like previously thought about, you know, anything like that. I would have to say that like consciously I've never had that correlation where I've said, oh, I don't trust her because of, you know, what happened with my mom. I would say that it might have actually been an opposite effect for me, which might sound kind of strange, but I think that I was always very, very trustworthy of people, like almost too much. And I think that it was rooted from wanting to be a people pleaser. And I think that it kind of came from that rejection. When I think about it, it might have been from that rejection that I had. So in that betrayal that I felt, that I just wanted people to like me. And so I would trust them until they did something that crossed me or something that was, you know, totally not right. And then I would see the signs, but I was almost like very vulnerable and very, very just gullible when it came to things. So I think in that aspect, it might have affected it for sure.
I was going to ask Stephanie, so talking to the 5-year-old Stephanie, what kind of response did you want your mom to have? What would you have, ideally, what would you have wanted her to do about the situation?
Yeah, ideally, I think that I was so, like, I don't know if I could say excited, but when she picked me up from school and she told me he was leaving and, you know, that I was going to go upstairs and tell him how I felt, and I didn't want to, and I don't know if I begged her, but I feel like inside I was begging her not to make me do it. I understand now why she did. But like I said, I got that courage to do it because I knew he was leaving. Ideally, if she would have actually followed through with that, that would have been completely different, a completely different outcome, you know, completely different the way I looked at her as far as our relationship. Obviously, the damage was done, so the different healing and deliverance and all of that stuff that had to happen was going to have to happen anyways, but I think as far as mine and her relationship, that would have made a huge difference. But honestly, it's so hard to say that, even because not like if I don't know, it's hard because it's like I have grown so much and I am the person I am today because of the things that I went through. And it's not that I necessarily wanted to go through those things or would have rather had him stay and have gone through that. But God turns everything around and uses it for his glory. So it's really hard for me even to say that. But as Stephanie, the little girl, speaking for her, I would have wanted her to make him leave like she said she was going to.
Yeah, that makes sense. That definitely makes sense. And the only reason I asked about if you think it affected – like your ability to have good, healthy relationships with females. The only reason I ask that is because, as Tamika mentioned, that, you know, the responses and the interpretation of responses vary between people who have been sexually abused before. And It is an interesting way to think about it, because I asked that question based off of my perspective, because whenever – you know, not to say that I wasn't molested by a female or anything, but I'm saying, like, with different things that happened or subconsciously happened, I should say, between my relationship with me and my mom, it did kind of affect that. And so I was just wondering if you could relate to that or how you felt about it. But what you said, I understand why you would respond that way in saying you know, things may have been different, you felt, if she had gone through with doing what she originally said she was going to do.
Yeah.
Okay, and so basically, kind of just moving a little bit forward here, it's looking like, you know, we might have to do a part two here. but just thinking about, like, the abuse you know, the verbal abuse, the physical and emotional abuse that you watch between your mom and was there any abuse that you witnessed between your mom and your biological father, I should ask first?
Yeah, definitely. My father was very abusive to my mom and at different points also to me. So I definitely grew up on the side of a ring, so to speak. Yeah, definitely witnessed a lot of that.
Sorry. With that, I guess looking back, like in retrospect, do you feel like witnessing that, you know, as it became, I guess, somewhat of a norm, do you feel mm-hmm. like that kind of spilled over into your relationships with your boyfriends after that, even, you know, before you had children, I should say?
Yeah, actually both, before and after children and everything else. It totally affected my relationships. What stands out to me, I know you said before children, but what stands out to me the most is with my children and with my husband and with, you know, when he was my boyfriend or whatever. It's something that I constantly have to take to God, and not so much anymore, but for a long time, because what I realized is, in writing this book, is that I made a vow to myself. Vows are never good, like, depending on what kind of vow it is, you know, but I made a vow to myself that I would never be abused, like physically abused or verbally abused in a relationship, that I wasn't going to live what my mom went through. That wasn't going to be me. And I actually used to joke and say, if anybody's getting, I think when my husband, when we were dating, because we've been together since I was 15 minus 2 years that we weren't together, and now I'm 31. But I used to joke with him and say, if anybody's getting abused in this relationship, it's going to be you. And I believe that, and I meant that with my whole heart. Like, he was the one that was going to get beat, because I was not getting beat, you know, and I meant that. And that's a scary vow that I had to, like, God, please forgive me for making that vow. But just with growing up in that kind of hostile environment, you know, there was a lot of yelling and things like that. So I found myself struggling with that all the time. Like, when I get mad or upset, like, I'm like a child and I'm like yelling and, you know, all of those different things. And it's like, I would constantly, it was like a thorn in my flesh. I'd have to constantly take that to God. Like, God, I don't want to be like this. I don't want to be angry. I don't want to fly off the handle and go off on my kids or go off on my husband. So yeah, it's definitely something that affected me tremendously.
Yeah, talk about thorns in flesh. We know all about thorns in flesh.
Yeah.
So I guess from here, because I don't want to give too much of the book away, if anybody's listening
yeah.
and you want more juicy yeah. details, I want you to go and buy that book.
Yeah.
So quickly, the last question that I want to ask is, tell us briefly, like, how was everything restored? Like, how was the relationship between you and your mom restored? What was the process that you went through with forgiving your stepdad? And, you know, just how did your restoration process look with you getting to know God and starting your relationship with Him?
Yeah, so I know we're running out of time, so I'll try to make this as quick as I can. So basically, it started with me. The restoration, the forgiveness of everybody else and everything, it had to start with me. God was calling me. He was wooing me. You know, I did a lot of things. In my book, you'll find a lot of things that happened to me, but you're also going to find a lot of things that I did, and I balanced it pretty well. And I did that because it's important to not only forgive others, but to forgive yourself. And I did some things, you know, as a result of some of the things that I experienced, not making excuses or anything like that, because I had choices. We all have choices.
Mm-hmm.
But I was at a place where I couldn't do anything but look up. Like, that's the only place that I could do. And my mom, she would drop me off at church and pick me up when I was younger, even though she didn't go. She would drop me off. My grandma was a praying grandma. she taught me how to pray when I was young. And when we lived different places, because my dad was in the military, my biological father, when I was younger, but when we would come home, I would go to church with an aunt and uncle. So I had those seeds that were planted in me. And actually, also, when I was in fifth grade, when I was abused, that was my first year that I was in a parochial school, because my stepdad put me and my brother in a parochial school, a private school. So I had those seeds that were planted in me, and they came back in full circle. And I actually worked at an automotive plant at this period of time where I was just like rock bottom, just more emotionally and spiritually than anything. I couldn't go any further. And there were people that God had placed around me that had planted seeds also within the plant that I worked at. And so when I was at that breaking point, God highlighted those people to me. And literally, I was working on a line one day, and I had been just like so much fear in me. I couldn't sleep. It was like, you know, a devil on one shoulder, an angel on the other. I was having crazy thoughts. I thought I was going to have a nervous breakdown. It was awful. And I was just, I started crying on this line, you know, where you're trying to do your job. And I look over, and there was one of my coworkers standing there, and I swear he looked like just a pillar of strength. He looked like a lighthouse. He was completely highlighted, and I just got off the line, and I walked over to him and started crying, and I was just like, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. I don't remember everything I said to him. And he's like, you need to go to church. He's like, God is calling you. And in that instant, it was like, I just knew that that was it. And I went to church that Sunday, and I walked into that church, and I felt the presence of God that I didn't realize was the presence of God. I had never felt the presence of God like that before in my life. And I walked in there, and I was crying during worship. And when it was time, you know, to give your life to God, I went up there and I did it. And I never looked back. And I haven't looked back since then. And that was in 99 or the end of 90, I think. And so so that's how it started. So it was a process. I was on fire for God. I still am. But I allowed him to come in and just heal and deliver me. It was a process. This book was great for deep healing. I got a lot of healing from that. But through that, and sharing, going back to the book, sharing a little bit about my mom's upbringing, a little bit about my dad's upbringing, that was purposeful for what I thought, but really what God was showing me and helping me is that in order to forgive them, I had to have compassion for them. And sharing their stories in my book allowed me to go back to the things that they went through and realize they did the best that they could, and not giving them excuses or condoning what they did or didn't do. But I truly feel like they did the best that they could with what they experienced. And so through that is how I was able to forgive them. And there was a period of time where me and my mom didn't talk at all. There was a big blow up, a big fight. But I will tell you today that God is a God of restoration. He is a redeeming God. He is a healer. And my mom is my best friend. She is my best friend. Besides my husband, if you're listening, honey, you're my best friend too. But she is such a mighty, 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 mighty woman of God. And I understand why the enemy would come after our relationship and try to cause division the way that he did, because my mom is a powerhouse, and she pours so much into me. And she is there for me through everything. And she is a prayer warrior, and she reminds me of who I am. And she has done nothing but support this whole vision that God has given me, and it's just been so powerful. And just really quick with my stepdad, I was able, you'll find in the book, so you guys have to get the book, but he presented an opportunity. Go ahead.
Tell them where to go to get the book. Tell them about
Okay. So really quick, he presented the opportunity for me to actually go to my stepdad. So that's all I'll say about that. But you can go to StephanieCozzolino.com and you can get your signed copy of My Father and I, but it's also available on Amazon.com. It'll just come directly from Amazon. So it's Stephanie with a PH, and my last name is C as in cat, OZZOLINO.com. It's called My Father and I. I pray that it blesses you, and I'm just so grateful for this opportunity to share my story.
No problem. We really appreciate both you and your mom. And I can vouch for that. Your mom is a powerhouse. There have been times where, you know, I was connected to her on Facebook and I backslid and got into some trouble and she was in my inbox causing a firestorm with prayers. So I can definitely vouch for that. In the sense
that's her.
Like, she is a powerful woman of God.
I had no
clue.
Wanna,
See, you didn't know, and you just you caused a firestorm in faith and didn't even know what you were talking about, but you knew.
Wow.
So,
praise God.
I just want to thank you and your mom so much for coming on the show and sharing your hearts, being transparent, and I pray that you know, as much as it was a blessing for you, it was a blessing for our listeners. We're also going to post the rebroadcast link within the Facebook event, and I'll post it tomorrow. And also the website where you can get Stephanie's book. Please go get it. Please go get it. I'm telling you, it's a great book. It's going to help you. It's going to heal you. It's going to make you feel a bunch of emotions, but it's great. And, yeah, don't forget to tune in next week, Monday at the same time, 8:30 p.m. Central Standard Time and 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We want to thank you all. We pray that you'll have a productive week and have a great night.
Bye.
Thank you all for tuning in, and we hope that you continue to join us every Monday for Relentless Pursuit at 6:30 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Also, tune in on Tuesdays for Woman to Woman with Minister LaDon and Coach D at 7 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. And on Thursdays, we have Processing the Pain with Coach D at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. We thank you so much, and thank you for your continued support.
surrender.